On this week's show, it's 4 out of 4 for the Irish provinces in Europe.
But we're still struggling for viewers because we're competing with Simon Zeebo's live broadcast of his wife's labour.
It's Saracens catfish racing by starting their straight-legged lunch lady at fullback.
Donegal Ryan gets sunburnt at the indoor racing stadium.
I'm sweating profusely.
Joe presents Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Hello and you're very welcome to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby here on Joe together with Guinness. Round one of the Champions Cup over in Dunwich, 4 Irish provinces, 4 wins, 2 away from home, 2 home. Really, really good results across the board. Trimby, cold day today in Ireland. Christmassy feeling about it.
Frosty start, yeah. I had to do the old kettle trick this morning on the windscreen. And then whenever I got to the train station, I had a decision to make. I was like, I'm not taking the scooter out on a day like that.
Trimby has a scooter, one of these little electric scooters.
One of these cool scooters.
Yeah.
You can say it.
Yeah, he got pulled by the cop last week for driving down the Lewis line.
Yeah, he says this guard had 2 young guards in the back and he was showing off. He pulled me over and he goes, you've no helmet, you've no insurance, you've no tax, and you're scooting on a Lewis line.
Where are you supposed to have your tax insurance? Like here.
Yeah, how do you know?
Yeah.
No, you're right.
Fair enough. Stuck in your forehead.
Yeah.
And you no helmet either. So do you need a license for that?
Apparently. I thought it was different down here. I thought that was the case up north anyway.
But you left it at home?
I left the scooter. Yeah, it was too frosty. It's not scooter season. I'm off my bike twice recently. And the scooter, I've been 100%.
A little bit safer. We're only that far off the ground, so it's a little bit safer, right?
No, I think scooter could be worse. Yeah.
I'd be looking to hit you if I saw you in your scooter.
You would hit...
Just a little nudge, like...
Hold on, because you know me and you'd think, oh, it's Trimby, it'll be a bit cracked. Or you mean if
something about the scooters, I'm like, fuck that guy. Give him a little bit of a nudge. It was frosty in Limerick, and when I was leaving, I had to do the frosting as well. I was late leaving, so I had to run back in then, and you're panicking, obviously.
Yeah.
And then you end up bringing the pot and pan with you in the car and everything, like...
You put it in the pot?
Yeah.
Why should I go kettle?
Because my hot water in my sink is really hot. So I didn't boil the kettle. So I just blasted it. But it reminded me of Mike Prendergast, who was late for training back in the day in Munster. And he got out to realise that he needed to defrost the windows. Looked at his watch, didn't realise he had no time. So just said he'd get into the car and try and do the head out the window. But he couldn't get the window down because it was frozen. He decided that he would drive by memory for the first the first 2 minutes until he got, like, he stuck on the wipers. So I think he just reversed, and one of his neighbours had left the car outside the house and he just reversed straight back into his neighbour's car. One of many Mike Prendergastisms. I think we should do that weekly, actually. He's got some golden ones.
Yeah, get him on.
Yeah. Did you go weekend?
I was over in Bath at the Ulster game.
What a result.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Big result. They can get a lot better, though. Mm. But they ground out a result. They didn't play that well, but well enough to get the result in the rec, which is...
Yeah, tough place to go.
Yeah, fair enough.
And you were co-coms?
Co-coms, yeah, with Ben Kay. And Nick Mullins, lovely guy, Nick Mullins, same Ben Kay, and then Martin Bayfield.
He's very good.
Brilliant. Mm. Those guys are pros. Yeah. It should be a step up, it's higher profile, but they're such pros, it's so relaxed, it was brilliant. And you know who I met? I met Tim from Egg Chasers.
Oh, good way, yeah.
Yeah.
Love that.
I just heard him chatting a bit, and I was like, that sounds familiar.
Yeah. What was he like?
Sound. Yeah. And he gave me a shout out in Egg Chasers.
So he gave him one.
Uh-huh. Although he didn't mention our podcast.
Well, maybe he will now.
Yeah, we can blank it out.
Yeah. Ours is a better name, I think. Egg Chasers is confusing. It's like, I don't know, it seems so nerdy. It's like the Big Bang Theory. That's what I think of when I hear it.
Oh, really? Yes, yeah. Yes, fair enough, yeah.
I did co-coms in,
in
Wales for the Munster Ospreys game with Don O'Sullivan from... 95 FM and Virgin Media, who's very good, taught me a lot. Actually, it was my first co-coms in 13 years, would you believe?
Hiatus?
Yeah, it was good crack. We went over Friday, had a few pints. Don doesn't drink.
Uh-huh.
He does now. twisted his arm. So it's good crack, yeah. We kind of mingled around Swansea. Swansea's a lovely city. Had some mulled wine, a few pints.
Yeah.
Good crack.
Yeah.
Then good laugh at the game.
So hold on, it was for radio then? Radio comms?
Yeah.
So the thing about radio comms is there's no right answer. You make up your own reality.
Yeah.
You're like, they'll take your word for it.
Just don't stop talking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, prove it. I'm right because I say I'm right.
Dom was saying that there's some people that that watch the telly and turn on the radio.
They're marginal. They're not.
Yeah.
That's not.
So I was picturing them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and then I watched, finished off the weekend by watching I'm a Celebrity last night. I think this could be a theme for us.
Oh, go away.
Yeah.
Okay, I recorded it because I thought you might.
Yeah.
But I didn't watch it.
Yeah, Haskell's obviously in there. Yeah. Nadine Coyle. Mm. And then Andrew Maxwell, the Irish comedian. Do you know much about him?
Yeah. How did he manage to get in there?
He was grand. He didn't have much to do in that first episode.
He's great. Yeah.
Nadine Coyle, though, is getting hammered for her accent. Hammered.
It's ridiculous.
There's just a... It's,
Flair.
Yeah.
Flower.
Yeah. What? It's slightly American now as well, though.
Yeah.
She was chatting to Caitlyn Jenner, and the two of them were... Caitlyn Jenner's on as well. The two of them were getting in the helicopter. Brilliant. And she's been in Australia.
It's a great sentence.
Yeah. She's been in Australia 5 minutes. And I was in the kitchen and I was watching it. And just heard this. I'm sweating profusely. I looked and she had this beetroot red face. And then she's like, I feel sick. I was like, she's got a heat stroke. She's only been there 5 minutes. Hasn't even got into the jungle. I was like, I'm going to watch this. She's not going to last long.
She won't, like, because she just gets lashed with spiders and stuff like that. And that's, you're slapping them in the face with snakes.
Yeah, oh, yeah, crack. Yeah.
So it's their job is to make her as uncomfortable as possible.
Yeah, I'd say so. I was thinking, Flav's role on this show is a little bit like, he's kind of out, you know, a little bit out of his comfort zone. And he, this is almost like the jungle for him. And every time he comes on, he does a bush chugger trial every single week.
Are we Anton Deck?
Yeah.
No. Andor Deck.
We're way stupider than Anton Deck.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, when it comes to rugby, he's like, I'm a coach. I don't want to be sitting on this sofa talking rubbish with you two morons. And every week we're like...
We should have like a, something we can pull on that releases slime on him every week or something. Yeah.
So, yeah, he's... He's the James Haskell of our show, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, he'll love that.
He will, yeah. He'll not like giving Haskell too much profile.
No. Let's get him out. Flaz just arrived. I can hear him mouthing off in the background. We've got a lot of we've got a lot of Champion Cups to talk about. Got the weekend ahead for all the Irish provinces. And a little bit of chat on Saracens as well with their decision not to... lodge an appeal against
they had us all
their...
fooled, didn't they?
Yeah. Catfished us. Yeah. All right. Let's get Gerry Fannery on.
You're listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
All right, welcome to the show, Fla. Trimby just compared you to James Haskell on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here.
I think you're too good for us around here, do you?
No, you said that. Yeah, I presume you're not too happy with that, are you?
I don't see the resemblance.
Could you do something like I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here?
I don't think so, no.
There's an Irish equivalent. Where would they send you?
Where?
Botevant.
Achill Island. No, I couldn't do it. I just get too cranky. Without the food. Like Greg O'Shea was saying how they sometimes, you remember when we were asked him, when he was on the live show, he was saying about Love Island that they would deliberately like reduce the amount of sleep they had so they'd be like really, really, everyone would be quite tense the next day. And no, it wouldn't work for me.
Yeah. I think Haskell, he's going to get hangry.
Yeah.
He was giving out about that on Instagram.
Yeah, I think we're going to get to see the real Haskell, which is going to be brilliant, I think. Like the equivalent, the jungle equivalent of he squirted water in the face. Because we were chatting last weekend at Rory's testimonial. Nick Knowles was there. You know Nick Knowles, the DIY guy. He did the jungle last time. And Anna again goes to him, Jimmy Nesbitt. Jimmy, what's his name? That's Nick Knowles. Like, as if she was impressed with Nick Knowles. And Nesbitt's like, I'm a big deal.
Yeah.
Because she loves I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. We're chatting to him, and Nick Knowles reckons he's not going to survive. Like, after a few days of being starved, he's going to be miserable. He said it's really, really bad. Like, you get so few calories.
Yeah.
And then Haskell was talking about how typically he would have 4,000 calories a day.
Yeah, he's in trouble.
Yeah. It's going to be hilarious.
He could shed a bit of weight, though, couldn't he? Get a little bit lean.
He has lost a lot. I think he said he was losing weight since he's retired, because obviously he doesn't need to be as big anymore.
Mm.
So, but I get what you mean. Someone stops feeding you when you're so used to regular feeding.
Yeah.
He's going to lose the rag.
Mm. All right, let's jump into the Champions Cup. Bath versus Ulster, you touched on it there. You felt they can get a lot better, Ulster.
They did well. I think they did well. They dug in and they showed a lot of character. They didn't have that much ball, but they were pretty clinical whenever they turned the ball over. They just couldn't hold on to it, really. They looked dangerous in their phase play. Looked really good. Set piece was really good. A little bit of a concern, Marty Moore going off, and then Jack McGrath went off early with his thumb again. Eric O'Sullivan came on and did exactly what he did all of last year, to be fair. And Al O'Connor came on for Sam Carter.
Mm.
Brilliant.
Sam Carter looked pretty bad going off, didn't he?
Yeah.
Just like a shoulder or maybe an AC or something.
Yeah, it looked like it all right. What's so funny about that?
No, there's nothing funny about it. I just thought it was...
Yeah, it looked bad, I thought. Robbie Little went off as well. Probably, you'd imagine, Craig Gilroy would probably get involved next week.
Where's Balakoon now?
He'd be in the mix as well, but decent bit of competition now. Yeah, he could.
Did you play with Rob Little? Was he around much when you were there?
Overlap.
How old is he?
Might be 21.
Is that all? Yeah,
something like that. Yeah, good fella.
Yeah,
funny, good crack.
Did you see? Obviously, you saw it. The try for Little's try. Ulster took the ball, looking to move the ball to the edge, and I think Freddie Burns is down injured, and the Bath physio is kind of standing in the defensive line.
Well played, yeah.
Like kind of facing the wrong way. Is it like he was trying to show that he was a body? It looked like he was trying to be a body in the defensive line to discourage Ulster to sling it. Ulster slung the ball out like directly almost at him. And he just kind of just shuffled out of the way. But I was like,
yeah.
Ooh,
no, it was
cheeky,
clever. Yeah,
cheeky.
Yeah.
Like that scene in Waterboy when. Waterboy's doing so well, and then the news report is like, other teams in Louisiana have tried to emulate what the Waterboy's done. Like, this university have used their towel boy. He just gets fucking cut in half. He's about 8 stone.
I agree with you. I thought in terms of the scrum penalty, the one at the very end, with having Tom O'Toole on and Eric O'Sullivan, like two young props.
Yeah.
And that was a massive turnover.
They stood up well, didn't they?
Yeah, I kind of...
That's a strong Bath scrum as well. They hammered Northampton last week.
I felt that, I would agree, it kind of felt like a smash and grab from Ulster, you know? Like they were down a lot of bodies to go over, to go away, first game in Europe. They showed massive character, and they just hung in there. Like Cooney's try was opportunist, and it was just basically Bath owning the ball, moving it left and right, and whenever they got a little bit of momentum, they looked like they could stretch him, but there was just an awful lot of errors on both sides.
Yeah, a lot of drop balls.
Mm.
It was sloppy enough. It looked promising for a few phases, and then it just got a bit sloppy, and someone coughed it up, or someone forced an offload.
Yeah,
Marcel could see it. It was ridiculous.
Could see it, yeah, he's so important to, like, when Ulster moved the ball to the edge, and then that first hit up then coming back against the grain is Coetzee, and that gets the momentum. Then it opens up the whole field for him to come back and play against. Like when Simmons, you know, Sam Simmons plays the 8 for Exeter.
Exeter, yeah.
Those kind of guys are so important. In same as Billy Vonopola for Sarries and for England. Like they become I think David Wallace was like that for Ireland for Munster years ago. Just this one guy, you're like, we'll get the ball to there, and then regardless of what happens at this ruck, the next phase, we'll go forward 2 metres and then we can play.
Yeah, that phase off the touchline, it's a thankless task.
Yeah.
Typically, isn't it? Because as long as you don't get smashed back, you've done a great job. Because there's a lot of heat getting on that. Nick Williams used to be brilliant at it as well.
In particular, for teams that are sort of using the touchline as an extra defender, and that they wedge, they work towards the touchline. So when they're defending you, they're letting you get the ball to the edge. So they're all going across the field towards the touchline. So then when the next phase comes back, they generally have loads of bodies nice and set in tight close to that ruck. So the obviously the best option is to actually move the ball back out of there again. But
yeah.
if you've got someone like Coetzee who can carry the ball into those bodies, tie them all up, and then it opens up the field, it's phenomenal.
Yeah. Coetzee got hit hard by Obano, is that his name? Obano?
Yeah, yeah, he was really good. The loose head.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was quality. Himself and Roberts, when they carried the ball well in the middle of the field, it opened up both sides then for Bath. But
I thought Roberts was going to do some damage with Billy Burns because he came down his channel two or three times. Mm-hmm. And I was going, Billy Burns isn't going to last here. Mm. And then Roberts picked up an injury. Mm, he was like down getting attention.
Was there a clip of... what? Oh, I was just thinking, I was confused because I rewatched games last night, thinking of that Montpellier number 8 man, that freak.
Is he the guy who smashed Cardi?
Yeah, the guy who just ran in and just see Cardi flying back. It was like something from WWE.
Yeah, crazy.
But
when Coetzee got hit hard, this is what Coetzee is like. I think a lot of big, like Vermeulen's probably like this as well. It's personal to them. We talked about this a little bit.
Mm.
It's personal to them. They love that physical, that bash.
Mm.
And then because he got kind of, he tipped it on, like he got the better of Obano. But he still would have felt like he had a score to settle.
Mm.
I was thinking if Obama had stayed on much longer, Coetzee's going to go after him. You know, it'll be so personal to him. It's obviously, like defensively, you teams can take advantage of that. But I was going, from his point of view, don't anger Coetzee.
Yeah,
he's going to go after you now.
And he's going to add whatever, if there's extra physicality he can bring in his carry, he'll do it.
Speaking of physicality, that Jacob Stockdale getting absolutely bashed by, who's that? Rocca Degooni.
Rocca Degooni was getting momentum all over the shot, man.
Yeah, that was ridiculous. Yeah. Like 20 yards, I was like, oh, God.
Yeah, I struggled with the pronunciation of Rocca Degooni.
Right?
Yeah, that was fine there, but not live.
No.
And a few people text me, just go for Rocco, mate. that one. I read in the Belfast Telegraph actually today. That was one thing, you know, the scores out of 10, and then literally one sentence on an entire 80-minute performance is the most annoying thing. And someone, one of the journalists at the Telegraph, highlighted Jacob for getting bumped by Rocca Degooni. I was going, did you see how much of a run-up he had? Did you see how physical he is? Mm. He did it to Cooney earlier on. He did it a couple of guys, but I was going,
there's very few people who'll be able to tackle that.
Yeah.
I think you just got to go with him in a situation like that, right? Like when you're meeting him head on and just bending at the hips, you're just going to go back in your heels. Or if you can kind of get him a little bit of a side on or something like that.
As he's coming at you, grab and kind of roll. But then if he uses any kind of footwork when you've already made the decision that I'm just going to soak this one, you're dead, you're gone.
I think he decided as soon as you get the ball, he's not making any footwork there.
It's like if we just got Jacob Stockdale, stood him in the middle of the field, and we drove a Jeep at him as fast as we could. And we were like, come on, tackle that Jeep.
Yeah.
Well, the finish, he made up for it with that try save and intercept at the end.
Yeah.
That was phenomenal.
I was watching it with my old man, and I was like, I don't believe, because I thought, this is going to be an unbelievable win here for Ulster. Like, away from home, like, all the injuries they had, they showed so much character. And then I was like, I don't believe it. When Mercer got the ball, and I was like, this is just going to be a simple catch pass. And just seen Stockdale just diving in. Ah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was brilliant, man. Brilliant.
Yeah, that was
It was
great.
An unbelievable weekend of rugby for Irish rugby.
Mm.
It was phenomenal. Like I watched the Connacht game yesterday, and I just thought, how they pulled that out, man, in the end. Because it was phenomenal performance. I thought, again, massive character. Like, they didn't deserve it, you know what I mean? I think overall. By the end of the game, they looked like they were fitter. They looked like they were getting more and more energised. But to start off with, man, they couldn't, you know, they were struggling, man. Their catch pass was poor. You know, a lot of balls going to the ground, poor kicks.
And three guys pulled out within an hour of kickoff.
And Robin Copeland, man. That dude, if there's a big occasion, he is the guy who can have a big occasion. I think he might have had three turnovers. The turnovers, their work at the breakdown.
Mm.
Buckley had an incredible turnover. Bundiaki had an incredible turnover. And Robin might have had three of them. And I remember seeing him in Munster. He's literally probably the most athletic player I've ever come across in rugby. Like, his quads, man, are, like, enormous. And he can do some stuff athletically.
Weird that he didn't work at Munster because he was so good at Cardiff.
Yeah, I think it's His last year, he got man of the match. Like the year before last, his last year at Munster, he must have got man of the match maybe 6 or 7 times out of 8 or 9 games. Mm. He was
already gone at that stage, though, right?
I don't think he wasn't gone. He was signed, but
he was signed for Connacht already at that stage.
I think he was negotiating. He was negotiating with Munster and with Connacht at the time, and Connacht were very keen. So that's the key. Keep Kopi on a short contract, and he is literally unplayable. Mm. But like they haven't seen, like, that's the first time I'd say they really saw what he can do at the weekend. He is insanely powerful, and what he can do athletically. Like, I just because I know him from coaching him. Like, I just be watching. I said, like, I just see him hitting things, and I know how hard he's hitting things, man. It's just putting it all together. Like, he. That's his. Him to be able to play within a game plan and structure is probably the biggest challenge for him. But when it comes to being an athlete, he is phenomenal, man.
For Connacht, in comparison to last week, like, it looked against Leinster that they were Connacht of normal. It's side to side rugby, playing from anywhere inside their own half and going nowhere. At the weekend, it was cup rugby. They didn't play any rugby really in the first half at all. It was. Tried to apply pressure. I thought that's what they were best. They just applied pressure on Montpellier, recognising that they're a French side coming over here. Mm. May not travel that well, try and get the fans on top of them.
After 80 minutes, they were like, oh, shit. Yeah. After 80 seconds, they've scored a try.
Yeah,
but yeah. I think it's fair. Like, they were just really poor against Leinster the previous week. Like, they got no momentum whatsoever. And to be fair, Leinster are one of the best teams at being real disciplined when they don't have the ball and making good decisions at the breakdown. And if they do go in to slow it down, if it's not on, they bounce out straight away. So now they've slowed the ball down. Now they've got 14 in the front line or 13 in their front line.
So what did Connacht do differently for you that allowed them to win that game?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I don't think Connacht or Ulster played particularly well.
Yeah.
Like, as the game went on, Connacht got momentum, but Connacht started poorly. Like, they, you know, they'd passes going to touch, like, they're, you know, poor kicks, poor game management. Like, what I love about Jack Carty is he's the kind of player that if I was going to watch a rugby game, I was like, oh, Jack Carty's playing, yes, because he just has a go all the time. And he's so dangerous, you know, for the break he made for Boyle's try. Like, he plays the moment in front of him and he can win that moment. It's just about, like, doing it in the right positions at times.
Then for Andy Friend to take him off with 15 minutes to go, bring on Stephen Fitzgerald.
Connor Fitzgerald.
Apologies.
Just as a recap, Stephen Fitzgerald was turnip head. Connor Fitzgerald is the sprout. So they're brothers, and Connor is Connor. Another root vegetable, another member of the root vegetable family.
Okay. But I mean, that's serious balls to bring him on there, and he massive impact straight away. Big pass over the top.
The pass, and then he nailed off. He had a great exit and nailed the kick to win the game. I thought brilliant.
Did you coach him in Munster?
Sprout and Turniped. They were both in Munster. Yeah, both. I didn't work with Connor a huge amount. He was in the sub academy at the time. He came up and did a few sessions with us. Great work ethic. He was playing with Shannon as well. Really, you know. Very good fundamentals in terms of his kicking game. So I think it's just for those guys, the good thing is that just getting opportunity, just getting game time. And Connor could still have been there in Munster and he would have been in the mix then probably with Ben Healy, with Jake Flannery's injured, but then you would have had Tyler, you would have had JJ, you would have had, I suppose, Rory as an option and obviously Joey. So he's down, he's so far off. And then you see him come on then against Montpellier. Aaron Cruden's at 10 and he doesn't look out of place. It just strengthens the depth chart everywhere in Irish rugby when you've got guys getting moved. People see it as they get irritated saying like that, you know, provinces are poaching players, but it's just using your resources efficiently to get all the best players playing at the highest level that you can in Irish rugby. And I thought the Connacht game was top class. I thought Fainga had a big game as well. But it was just really good from Connor, and they didn't play particularly well. They just stuck in there. Like, the fact that they had those turnovers kept them in the game. Like, I think I counted 5. I think Kopi had 3, Buckley and Aki, and Fainga was pretty effective as well in slowing the ball down. Like, you know, they got busted a good few times, but they just managed to get back in. And I thought it was a good performance.
To lose away next weekend, there'll be another. It'll be a massive step up. To lose were ridiculous.
Yeah.
On Friday night.
Yeah.
What was the deal with like said, Jared Butler? What was he injured for? What happened to him, Pat, before the game?
I don't know. Yeah. I could find out for you if
you could really do with a few like the likes of him back and a couple more back.
Yeah, like to be so short. I think like the previous week they'd lost Gavin Thornbury. They didn't have Ulton Delan and they didn't have Quinn Roo. Like there's your first three locks, and then I think they lost Gallagher at the weekend, and Maximway came on.
Tom Farrell.
Yeah, well. Farrell. Daly had a good game. Daly was always winning good, the moment in front of them. They have, like, to be fair, if you look at the way the World Cup has panned out, the Irish provinces are in a really good place because the English players who played in the World Cup final are coming back in drips and drabs. I know Underhill played, but most of them are going to be mentally and physically fairly spent. Whereas if you look, and the Welsh regions just seem to be taking their players and just giving them a big block and saying, you just get yourselves right for, we want you back for the Six Nations. Whereas Ireland have come back, the World Cup didn't go particularly well, but the players would be really, really hungry to go out and play. If you watch, like, watching the lads in Munster in the Ospreys game, I thought there was massive hunger there, and I think that they're in, like, Ospreys have been poor this year. They've been decimated with injuries, and then with the World Cup, they've been doubly hit. But to come back and Munster to play as well as they did against them, like, I thought Munster were really, really good. Mm. And Ospreys have been very poor this year. But that's, even though they got pumped, that's almost the best I've seen them, you know?
Yeah. It's different mindset coming, like, so the English lads and the Irish lads, in comparison. So England have probably had the time of their lives for most of the way through the World Cup. They started to look like the favourites, looked like they were going to be the world champions. Disappointment at the end, obviously, but generally that phase would have been amazing to be involved in.
Yeah.
And then dropping down to your clubs would be tough. Whereas Ireland, I know they said it was a happy camp and all, but still, I'm sure there would have been an element of, I'm looking forward to getting home here. And in the past, when things weren't going well for me or for Ireland, whenever I was involved, I always look forward to getting back to Ulster, especially a big European fixture. So those guys would be buzzing. All the Irish guys, I think, would be just thriving in a new environment, change of scenery.
It's literally like that. Like, people say you're only as good as your last game. They want to get home. And if someone says to you, no, like if someone said to the Irish players, you've got 6 weeks off now, you'd be like, oh God, 6 weeks of just living with you know, the way that World Cup panned out. Versus getting out, playing in a European Cup game, getting a bonus point away from home, starting it and going, this is what I'm about. This is, you know, so I think Ireland have, and you add in the fact that obviously Saracens are all over the shop now with what they're fielding and with the points deduction that they're not going to prioritise Europe at all. So then I think the Irish provinces are in a really good place. I thought, I watched in the Leinster Treviso game, obviously. Ringrose was outrageous, and Kelleher just kept adding on top. I thought Leinster, for how good they could be, how good they can be, were probably not hitting top form.
Treviso are a good side though.
And
they've turned the corner, haven't they? Especially the RDS.
Yeah,
they've got a couple of results.
Yeah, winning their last year, I think, probably gave them a lot of confidence going into this weekend. Yeah. They, you know, even the statement to kick to the corner after 5 minutes when they'd gone 5-0 down and they'd kicked to get just a score on the board. They kicked to the corner. I was like, what are they doing? And then mauled them over again a second time, almost got them a couple of times at the end as well. So not taking anything away from them, obviously. But
no, yeah. And Ian Keatley over there as well would be a good kind of a... I think you can always build up the opposition in your head to make monsters out of them. You know what I mean? These guys are monsters, but Keats would know all the Leinster players really well. He would know how Benetton are viewed. He would know, you know, so him coming in and having him in there and say, listen, we can really have a go at these lads, you know? And I think that, you know, that they're, I think Benetton, I don't think, again, I think the scoreline flattered them because I felt the Bud Troy was just like probably, it was just a really poor tackle entry. It just allowed him to get over the top.
You could say the same about Sexton's try. It was just, you know, very soft tackle that just allowed him make the break.
Yeah, but if you, what I'm saying is, like, looking at the sustain, the amount of ball that Leinster had, and how they were holding onto the ball and stretching him worse. I think it was like Benetton's was like a smash grab, get down. Someone, I think it was Andrew Porter, just probably didn't get a clean shot on him, and Bud was able to manipulate and get back over for the hooker Faivez try. They sacked them all. And it was just the fact that as they'd sacked it, then I think it was Luke McGrath was trying to allow for, I don't know, was it who was the catch-up defender on the inside, and Faiva just ran through him, the hooker. But I thought that, you know, Leinster have another few gears to go.
I thought Benetton silenced the crowd a little bit, and I think whoever was commentating noticed that. It's like he found it an eerie silence around the RDS. After 20 minutes, because that crowd is quite a jovial crowd, like drinking their goblets and eating grapes.
Who have you brought before us again?
Shopping on their phones.
James, no, finish them.
Is that like, I've been in dressing rooms where it's like, wow, Darren, silence the crowd. Is that something that you would have done now going down to Leinster? Is there?
Yeah, but I suppose, like, if you go out there with your game plans to silence the crowd, it's a lot easier said than done.
Yeah.
And maybe the intent to put it in the corner
when the crowd are cheering after an Leinster try, you're like,
this is unraveling.
It's not working.
they're being noisy again.
What's the plan B?
Spell it out to them. They're like this. Get a message onto Andrew Trimmon and tell him he needs to score some fucking tries to silence the crowd. Stop shushing the crowd.
Maybe it was the intent from Treviso, probably was effective.
Just frustrate them, I suppose.
Yeah.
Anthony, you know?
Yeah, maybe, but we've had very little joy in the RDS. I don't know about Munster through the years.
Not as much either. Very little as well.
You always play at the Aviva, don't you? We never get to play at the Aviva.
No, we've played the RDS the last couple of times as well. The Aviva is horrible to watch the game from, because when you're in the coach's box, it's just like you're in literally a box. And you can't really hear the crowd, and it's like watching a game on TV. It's just not a nice way. It's hard to judge it. Like when you're in Thomond Park, you're sitting there right amongst the crowd. You get to feel the energy that the players are feeling when the crowd is interacting with them and the crowd gets behind them. When you're in the Aviva, you're just like this. I'm just in a glass box here. I'm not really sure what to do. And then on 20 minutes, you have to go out and do an interview with someone, and you're like this. You know, trying to get that bit done, then get back into your little glass box. But I think Leinster will be one of Leinster's strengths is winning ugly, you know. And I think it'll be Leinster have such a strong squad. And when I just see guys like Kelleher coming through, when I see guys like Deegan, I think Deegan is going to be quality as well. When I see them coming through, you just start going to yourself, this is really the strength of Irish rugby, in that, like, Leo Cullen and Stuart Lancaster, they don't need to go and sit down and say, right, we've got to start recruiting all these players. They just, like, they're picking for one or two gems to drop in there, you know, like Scott Fardy did for them, like James Lowe did for them, because they have a conveyor belt pushing players through all the time, and just that's absolutely the future. And then I suppose because the Leinster one is so strong, then other provinces will benefit, you know, when players get moved around. But I thought it was good. I thought a good example of that now is Jeremy Lachman. If you go to the Munster game, and Jeremy Lachman was there behind Cian Healy, probably behind Jack McGrath at the time. Bent had played a little bit of loose head, and then you would have had Peter Dooley and Ed Byrne, all really, really quality players. Now, I'm not saying he's behind all of those, but I think they were trying to convert him to tight head. Came down to Munster, we had quite a few injuries at Loosehead, and he's just been, he was phenomenal at the weekend. He was incredible. He was, I remember watching him at Irish under 20s level, and because Liam O'Connor, Boomer, the Loosehead from, he was in Munster, was behind him selection wise. I remember looking and seeing the stats that Jeremy was putting, like Jeremy has like a 55 inch CMJ 55 centimeter CMJ, 55 inch. But like,
he's fly.
He is phenomenally powerful, man. And
that's,
I was just
incredible,
there,
man.
At the time when I was under he was 20s, I was there. Oh, I was like, this is just another absolute animal coming through now for Leinster. And then just lack of game time. He comes down to Munster, And, you know, it takes a bit of time to assimilate in there, but, man, he was awesome at the
weekend. First 20 minutes commentating, I just, he was all I was talking about. His ability to hit and then spin and turn and just keep going again and pump his legs. He was making 5-10 yards every time. I was like, where is this fella? Get him the ball. Where's the extra coming out of? And then the second half, he gets that little, the ball just popped into his hands out of nowhere. And I was like, oh, cool. And then he just accelerates like a back who knows how to like
accelerate,
create space down to a tee.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, just accelerates. And then not only did he, like, he had two players outside him that he could have pulled back a pass to, or most props would just carry. He fires a 20-yard pass to the third option, Chris Farrell, and puts it in front of him. Like, as a 13, you get a ball that's just floating into your hand. So you're, when you catch it, your head is up here. It's not over here. It's just like Chris Farrell accelerates.
It's a great, it's a great.
Was that the same? Was that Conway's?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was John Ryan.
No.
Oh, that was, yeah.
Lachman. It was unbelievable, man.
That's John Ryan would want him on the team every single week. Yeah. He'd be getting a little bit of like, geez, John Ryan had a great game as well.
I did make that mistake a few times, but I was giving it the other way around.
On the radio, no wrong answers.
But, and again, as you said, Irish players coming back, Conway's acceleration there, brilliant try. He was dangerous all night. I thought Conor Murray was absolutely brilliant the other night. Earl Z didn't get a huge amount to do, but when he was required, got a great finish to get, you know, he didn't score in the World Cup, so it was nice to get that monkey off his back. I did find they played a lot of game of rugby in between the 222s. Like, the way I would have thought they would have gone out against that Ospreys team is pin them in the corner, put pressure on them. These guys are, they're a bit, you know, what am I trying to say? Their back's against the wall. They're easily going to be fucking mowed down if you just go after them. Whereas Munster just kind of let them ease into the game a little bit, didn't really put them to the sword early on. And I was wondering, is that them getting their game plan ready with one eye on next week, one eye on Saracens, that they got to really, because lads are only coming back now, so they got to get that structure in place as opposed to playing percentages rugby and pinning them.
I don't think they would ever have, like, I don't think Johan would ever have said, we're going to, they'll always just try and focus on winning the game that's in front of them straight away. So they'll never say, listen, we have an eye on next week and we're going to do this and that. It's just going to be a case of when you're trying to integrate all these internationals back in, that's actually difficult from the calls perspective, because during the season, normally, they might go into national camp, they get the calls there for a little bit, you know, maybe a mini camp during, say, a mini camp for a couple of days, they come back in, they're straight back into the Munster calls again. Then they might go in for November internationals, that could be 4 weeks. And then they come back in and you just make sure. But when they go away for an extended block, like they do for a World Cup, where they don't hear, the last time they heard Munster calls was probably in May. And then they're just like, it's just all Ireland for months, then from pretty much the end of June until almost the end of October, and then they come back into Munster. It's a lot harder to integrate them back in. So there's going to be a little bit of that, and that will naturally just start to get they'll get up to speed with it.
And there's the difficulty as well of balancing up some of the young fellas who've done well. I know Leo Cullen talked about this with Leinster. You have to give them the credit for sticking their hand up and winning, what, 6 out of 6 in the league.
Yeah, that's it. The whole thing, like you said, when you come back. So if you're there and you're playing with Ireland and it hasn't gone as well as you want, you don't want to go back into another shit fight. You know, I'm not saying the World Cup was a shit fight, but you want to go back in and feed off the positivity that's there. So as a coach, there's a balancing act where the coach says, okay, I'm going to bring back, reintegrate some of these players, but I've got to reward the lads and be loyal to the guys who've put us in the position where the returning internationals are coming back into a team that's, if it's Munster that are 5 from 6, or if it's Leinster that are 6 from 6.
So reward the young fellas, but at the same time, don't punish the guys. You've been away with Ireland, have you? Maybe you'll prioritise us in the future.
Yeah.
You know, it seems harsh as well. There's a balance, I think.
What you're saying, Baz, I think Tyler, as the game towards the end of the game, I saw him picking off the corners, the coffin corners, they call them, because you're putting teams into the corner and killing them.
That's what was winning them the game. Yeah, I mean, if they hadn't. I agree, I enjoyed watching them play, I enjoyed the way they went about it, if they had a backdoor option, 9 times out of 10, they were taking that sweep option out the back door, which, you know, over the last few years, they may not. Like, Dave Kilcoyne normally would carry in an opportunity like that, whereas the weekend they were going out the back door. So I was enjoying that, but at the same time, if they hadn't gotten that bonus point at the end, would we be praising them for a brilliant performance? Because there was a lot of luck involved in getting that.
Possibly. It is something to look at. I think an away win, in Europe to start, when you're integrating that many players back into the team, is great.
Yeah,
a bonus point win is. Mm. Listen, you literally can't get any better. So I don't think we'd be criticising them. I think that Munster may want to be looking to play a little bit more, just hold on to the ball a little bit more as well. This season, I'm not 100% sure yet. They've I thought they looked really good. Look, Ospreys are like very, very poor, but that's the best I've seen them for being a poor side. So I thought there was just a lot of, like, I thought Munster's breakdown was excellent. I thought they were really, really good. I thought it's kind of like that vicious, a virtuous circle, because Ospreys traditionally would always try and put two players into the tackle and go high and try and go for that choke, and then with a reef. So if you're so used to to tackling high, it's very hard when someone runs at you low to stop momentum. And I felt Munster, every time they carried the ball, now they had good evasion, like you were saying, and Baz, they had good options all the time when they were attacking, which means it's not just so, I can see this guy coming, I just have to tackle him. But Ospreys struggled to stop momentum.
Yeah.
Really did. And I know Munster got caught for a couple of high tackles. That
I think the discipline probably helped Ospreys a little bit, or Munster's lack of discipline.
They got 15
penalties. But CJ Standard, 23 carries, with that 17 tackles, 2 turnovers, he was phenomenal. The work rate, I think when you're there with great seats right in the halfway line, when you're seeing how much work that guy gets through, it's absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
And the end, there was a really interesting part of the end where once you knew they needed it, the bonus point. If they didn't get the bonus point, this wasn't a disaster, but it was pretty important. And Ospreys had a scrum on Munster's line for like 76th minute, or before they got the scrum, they're picking and going, and you're just kind of going, leave them score, because Ospreys have nothing to. So we're just like, leave them score, and then they got a scrum, and the scrum was being reset. Next thing, you're up to 79 minutes, and it's like, leave them score. And I asked the lads afterwards, and the coaching box, they were like, yeah, they were trying to get the message down, like, just leave them score. What a bizarre situation! I've never been in that. Imagine being told like that when you're on the field, like, it's like, just leave them score. You're like, I was talking to Earlsey afterwards, and he was like, I was just going to go for the intercept. And I think if they score, they score. At least we're back down the field. So sure enough, they scored. Once they get back down the field, get in the field position. And you felt that's all they needed at that point, was to get into the 22. But it's still to throw that move to Tadhg Byrne and go off the top and then create that quick maul. It was unreal.
CJ then celebrated by strangling. He strangled someone.
I think, who was it?
I don't know. It was the second row, was it?
And I think he'd given CJ a little bit of a push in the head earlier on.
Well, he deserved to get strangled if he pushed him.
It was brilliant.
He squirted water in my face.
Marvin Ory.
He won't be doing that again.
I tell you who's worth watching and who's going to get in the Welsh squad if he keeps going the way he is Rodri Jones, the loose head for the Ospreys, because he's demolishing scrums all season.
Yeah. Really?
He was... I remember from a few years ago, I think he was originally at the Scarlets, and I think he could be 120 kilos or close enough to it. And they tried to change him to tight head, and I think they had a view on him like coming through at national level, and I think he picked up a few injuries and didn't see him for a couple of years then. But he has started the season and he's wrecking scrums, man. He caused Munster problems this weekend. I watched the Leinster game. He caused Leinster problems. He's just been causing problems for everyone that I've seen him up against.
He's a problem causer.
he's a habitual problem causer.
Different game for them next weekend. Obviously, Racing will present a completely different challenge, different problem.
Yeah,
they were pretty unreal yesterday. Picked a very strong team going out against. Saracens, who they're probably expecting to not to have their full deck. But we were saying on the way up, they kind of got catfished a little bit, isn't it? Like, you can imagine, like, yeah, we're class, we're unreal. You're gonna be so impressed with us, and then you show up, and it's like, not. What do you expect, Saracens?
All week, the Racing players are like, we're playing Saracens, the best team. They've got nine players involved in the World Cup final. This is gonna be such a challenge. And then they go out into the U arena, and they're like, hang on a second.
Why is this so easy?
This is pretty easy, and like. Saracens are like sending out Nigel Ray playing at number 8, who's there, I'm Billy Vunipola, and he's running along, they're like smashing him. They're like, man, Billy Vunipola has gone pure weak on the carry, isn't he? And then put up a bomb and like, let's test Liam Williams, and it's like the Saracens tea lady, and they're like, man, Liam Williams looks like a middle aged woman, and he's like catching the ball and running back.
Liam Williams' legs are straight. Didn't see that coming.
Ben
Russell was ridiculous, and I find the contrast between how smooth and slick and talented he is. They called him a maverick on BT, just stepping, chipping, regathering, offloading. Then you hear him being interviewed at the game. You're like, is that the same guy? It doesn't match up.
No, it does.
Can't understand a word he's saying.
Yeah.
He reminds me of the singer for Texas. You know,
Charlene Spittery.
Yes.
I was going to say Rhapsody Nesbitt.
She sounds like Rhapsody Nesbitt when she talks.
Does she?
Yeah.
Also, when she sings, she
sounds like Finn Russell.
But when she talks,
she sings like the way he plays.
Okay.
And then she just, like, it's just a contrast. It's the same thing.
Really?
Finn Russell, I find it hilarious.
That's hilarious. I'm going to look up her interviews with her.
Yeah.
They Saracens, this is again. Just looking at it, like, from how I would, when you finish up every year, you know, when you're coach, you're trying to take stock of how you went versus the best teams out there, and you're always comparing yourself to Leinster and to Saracens, and the fact that Saracens now are no longer, like, the fact that Saracens seem to be just prioritising the Premiership,
or is it that, look, they're not going to lodge an appeal, so we know that they're taking it, that they're going to be
they're
minus 34
Saris.
Points. They're saying Saris. But they're giving their English players a break, but they'll potentially have them back for the Munster match.
Yeah, Mark McCall said...
Or this weekend, potentially.
They might have rested those guys anyway. Kind of on touching on what we were talking about before.
So, like, you'd imagine they'd beat Ospreys, you know, if they bring back one or two more of them next weekend, they'll beat Ospreys at home, then you get them back for the Munster match and...
I don't know.
So,
it'll be interesting. Yeah, you're right.
Jesus, not that's not often you
no.
do that.
No, well, like I
stumped you there. Huh?
I was thinking that possibly what they might just do is just listen. We're just going to prioritize the Premiership and just make sure that we don't get relegated.
Yeah.
And I suppose.
But I suppose the only way to get into the Champions Cup though for next year is to win it. So I mean, if you looked at the last 10 years of the Premiership and you took 34 points off Saracens at the end of the season, they'll still stay up. They won't get relegated each year. So with that in mind, you just got to back themselves that they're going to win every game per usual. And then, but that will only get them to, you know, at best mid-table. So they've got to focus on the Champions Cup to get them into the Champions Cup next year. So...
I'd say they're just not. That's just not their priority. They're just saying because financially, I think it will affect them a whole lot more if they were to get relegated than if they don't qualify for the Champions Cup.
But classically, Saracens would play these players every week anyway. You know,
yeah.
So and that's why they're so successful. You know, Owen Farrell would play every 80 minutes. He gets the opportunity to.
Did they not rotate quite a bit? I thought Saracens have
they just have an insane squad, so they can rotate. So they can say we're not going to play Maro Itoje this weekend. But we'll play Will Skelton, we'll play George Cruz, or we'll play Nick Asikwe and we'll play George Cruz.
Yeah.
You know,
it's probably not the financial impact of not making Europe. It's probably more the Saracens brand. It's already been damaged, obviously, with that stuff. But next year, if they're not playing in Europe, it would be.
Well, are they allowed to play the players this year now? That they, you know, they've obviously broken the salary.
My question was straight away. So if they were in breach of the salary, their squad is even stronger than it was the year before. So it's not like they said, you take a bit of a pay cut. So I don't know. I don't know. Is mm-hmm.
Yeah. You've been guilty last year, the year before, and the year before that.
This are you guilty this grand. Year?
No, I swear. Swear.
Wait a second. Your backfield there has got Goode, it's got Williams, and it's got Elliot Daly. There are
the
like
lunch lady.
Yeah.
She's cheap, to be fair.
But they have to pretend that that's when they're catfishing teams in Europe. But yeah, I don't know what way it's going to work. But I think that this year now, I think is the best chance that Irish teams are going to have at winning Europe.
Classically, Irish teams after the World Cup. 2008, Munster came back. Munster players would come back from the World Cup, put in a big shift and won the Heineken Cup. Same in 2011, Leinster came back. Leinster players came back and won it. So we've and in 2015 as well, did we? So you'd imagine, like with the way that each of them have played at the weekend, coming back, that they've got a.
It'll be mainly French teams challenging. It'll be Racing, Toulouse. And Leon, Clermont, you would have thought. Exeter were the standard English team at the weekend. Yeah. But I think outside that, Gloucester, Poor, Bath, Poor.
Yeah. A lot of the teams in the Premiership, man, are just straight up, are just not fit enough, man. The Premiership is slow.
That's what I thought the big difference was at the weekend with Ulster and Bath. Yeah. It was fitness.
Do you see how much of a big deal Eddie Jones made? And anyone that's not all the knowledgeable guys about rugby in England. When I went over to the House of Rugby and Mike Tindall was talking about it, and he just said, like he said, the big thing now, this England team is going to be really, really fit, which you take for granted in Ireland that the Irish team is always going to be fit, no matter what it's doing. But I think the fact that the Premiership is slower and the fact that the players, you know, there's such a focus on players getting bigger, that can generally mean that they've got quite a gap to bridge when they go from Premiership straight to international rugby. So I think the fact that they got them all together and got them so fit for the World Cup, that's why England looked so sharp. Like, the people just kept saying, Billy Vunipola is so fit, he's so fit. Whereas I would never go out and say, oh, CJ Standard's going to be fit this year because he got, you know, he had a good extended block in pre-season with the national team. You take it for granted.
Classically, French teams then would be potentially not fit either. They don't put a huge emphasis on that. Racing at the weekend for Munster. Would Munster go after them with that in mind, or do they just have so much X factor they don't even need to worry about fitness?
With Racing?
Yeah.
We would always have, when we were prepared for Racing in the past, we would be like, they'd bring out Tammy Afuna, who's like 140 something kilos, and you'd be like, happy days, because Dave Kilcoyne or one of the lads would be up against him there, and you'd always back the Munster scrum against them, even though they're so big. You'd have a big focus on your body height when you're carrying, because, you know, if someone's bigger than you, then you can level that advantage to have by playing lower than them in everything. Like if you're 140 kilos and someone is making you constantly go into breakdowns and hit the ground and get back up, it's exhausting. And the Racing have got, like, they've got a lot of really clever players who, like, will manage their energy and then try and have a big moment. So that's sort of where we used to prep for when we play Racing. Is like, listen, they have players like Imhoff is just magic. Like you said, Russell, magic. And you may be doing everything right for 20, 30 minutes, and next minute, boom, there's a try and you're under the sticks and you're like, what just happened? And you say, well, we knew that they have such a quality of player in their team that they could do this. So let's not panic. Let's get back. Let's get to our focus. Let's win the restart and we'll build from there.
Yeah, so Munster will have to play to that kind of strength. So, talked about that big Racing pack. Can't go coffin corners. You can't play that sort of game against that sort of a team. You have to keep the pace up. You have to keep moving them around.
I think you can go if you find the coffin corner.
Because I think I was going to say Ulster are the same. I know if you, but sure, like it's. I know they've got a talented backline as well, but I just think Munster need to shift. They need to shift that pack around, and I think it's the same for Ulster. Yes. They need to shift Clermont around. Because if they try and win collisions, they're going to win very few.
Yeah, if it gets slow, you need to keep tempo. When you get into the opposition half, you need to keep tempo.
But that's where I think, so there's Clermont and Racing. That's their style and it suits them. And that's the style that you'd have to play to get the benefit, to progress, to do well against them. But I think that's where Toulouse are different. Toulouse in the second half against Gloucester, they just loved playing rugby. Throwing the ball about, keep the ball moving. Quick rocks, just offloads everywhere.
And that's why I think they can do both. They can play big and physical and direct, but they can also give it to the French backs. Their back three are ridiculous. And you've still got Dupont. Is Dupont the nine? Dupont the wee round fella. And Colby to come back into that team. I think Toulouse are head and shoulders.
Yeah.
They look quality last year as well.
Yeah.
So no, you're right. I think Racing are a strange team in that, like, Racing's lineout, like, you can get at their lineout, but their defensive lineout is awesome. Like, they have, like, with Laure, Donnacha Ryan has made a huge difference to them. I physically could see the difference. The minute Donnacha Ryan started for them, like, we played them.
I'm just thinking, did you see the picture of Donnacha Zeeb's put up? The reddest face you'll ever see in your life straight after the game looked like Nadine Coyle's face.
You know, like, you see him shouting at the Sarri's hooker to throw the ball into the lineup. He's just like, come on. It's like, man, you can take the man out of Tipperary.
He's really taken to Paris, isn't he?
He pretty much beat us, man. We went over to the U Arena.
Yeah.
He pretty much beat us, man, because he's just so fit. Like, when we used to, I think Racing are figuring it out. We used to play them and they used to pick, like, this huge pack. But you'd be like, you've just got all these big guys who are good for one to two phases. But if it goes into an extended passage, they struggle. And then they started starting Laure, the six, who's awesome in the lineout. They started putting Donnacha Ryan came into the mix. And Donnacha Ryan is, like, just a machine. So I think that they're getting a good balance there. I'm not sure if they're going to be able to put it together consistently. Like, they'll be very good at home playing in the U Arena. When you play on that surface, it's quite weird. It's like being in a nightclub and playing a game
of rugby.
Is that
La Défense? Is that one?
Yeah. The U Arena. Is that what it's called?
Okay.
Oh, La Défense. Yeah. Well, I thought it was called the U Arena, but it was... And it's... there. It's just... If you don't play on the 4G pitches regularly, that you have a disadvantage, because when you play on grass, it's attack and defence is a little bit more even. When you play on the 4G pitch... attack has a massive advantage, because every time that you're running with the ground is not absorbing as much of your energy. So your horizontal momentum going into the tackle is way, way more. So, like, the collisions are bigger as well. So if you haven't played on it for a while, and small things like if you haven't scrummed on it, you know, that they have a big advantage. So when they go away from that and they have to play on grass, it's going to be more difficult for them. So if they're coming to Thomond Park, I think that Munster will have an advantage there.
Get men, women and children screaming at them, and dogs
go on.
Shouting at them.
Go on.
big challenge for them going to Munster. And all the Irish provinces playing against French teams this weekend. Leinster away to Lyon, Connacht away to Toulouse, and Ulster home to Claremont. We'll be back next week to look at all of those. We're going to take a break now and come back with Black and White.
You're listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
Okay, time for Black and White. Interesting one this week. So CVC have gone and bought a 27% stake in the Pro 14.
Is that the pharmacy?
Yep, that's it. And as a result of that, the RFU are in for a 40 million windfall. So... this week's Black and White is, how is the money best spent to grow the game, to make the game sustainable, to improve the quality of the game in Ireland? Who wants to go first?
I think I could spend that money pretty good.
Okay.
Yep.
Put them on the clock, Pat.
Okay. The children, somebody think of the children, give them the money, put it into the schools, get them... good coaches, good gear, good, get them interested in the game. Then player welfare in Ireland, look after them, look after, like, their future in the sport, maybe. Future outside of sport, I presume. I don't know what I'm saying.
Is it a future in the sport or outside the sport?
Just give them the money. Just give put it back into the game. Build better facilities for the children. You know, do you ever see that Miss South Carolina and she's like, South Africa, the people of Iraq in our world.
How did she say it? I truly believe. In areas such as maps for
children in our schools, they don't have maps.
Oh yeah, okay.
They don't know where the geography is for the better of our world.
Baz, the bar is here. Jimby, take it away.
So, in anticipation of this, I did a bit of research and I discovered that CVC invested in Formula One in 2006, and since then, viewing figures and the popularity of the sport has decreased rapidly because they take all this corporate money, whereas they don't care about the sport. So they might implement something similar in Ireland. So I thought they could introduce corporate-only facilities. So RDS is pretty much corporate-only anyway, but Thomond Park's just corporate. Sports Ground and Kingspan are just me.
What does that look like? Is that like prawn
that
sandwich,
looks like,
prawn sandwich,
yes,
vending machines?
I'll get around to that. But initially, first of all, you don't get allowed into the ground unless you have a wife who wears a fur coat, and then that's fine, then you can get in. So it's all fur-coated, clad wives of corporate.
Oh, you have to have a wife?
Or a husband.
Okay.
It's 2019, Fla.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There are husbands with fur coats out there.
Yeah.
who need to be accommodated.
Well, what about the animals?
Let him talk.
Faux fur.
Faux fur.
Is that what it's called? Faux fur?
Yeah.
Yeah. So faux fur only, obviously. Mm. And also then... you're only allowed to consume prawn sandwiches on match day. In fact, you don't get allowed into this stand unless you've consumed one within an hour of kickoff.
So it's either breathalyze you for prawn sandwiches.
they breathalyze for non-prawn breath. If you've non-prawn breath, you don't get in.
Mm. They have a crustacean breathalyzer.
Yes, that as well. One of those. So I think this will sort out the clientele. And this will make sure that CVC get a significant ROI. And Irish rugby will struggle as a result. No one will care about all that crap you said. No one will care about any of that.
Honestly,
I think like if Baz the bar was here, Trimby the bar is even lower here. So Baz, I'm going to give you that.
Catfished him.
Yeah, you tricked me. You've tricked me by 10 weeks in a row now.
Yeah. I cannot
fool me once.
Yeah. I had nothing prepared for that. I can't believe you actually prepared and you
were
worse.
I didn't prepare.
You're worse than what I
didn't prepare nothing.
That was terrible.
Okay.
I'll take it.
I think black and white's a real loser here.
Yeah. Right, everybody, thanks a million for listening. And for those of you watching on YouTube, hello, thanks for watching. Please do leave us a rating and a review. It helps other rugby fans find the show. Cheers to everyone that was involved in organising the show today. To Pat, to Dermot, to Anthony, to Paul. This has been Baz and Andrews, House of Rugby, here on Joe, together with Guinness.
Party on.
You were listening to Baz and Andrews, House of Rugby on Joe. Together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie for the facts.